Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. It's the GOP turn this hour, or the more power hour, so to speak. And Jeremy Tribus is our guest. Jeremy, state senator out of the Great Falls area, District 10, central Montana as well. Interesting bill on property tax relief. Just a number of interesting bills coming from Senator Tribus as well. And everything that's on the floor in the Senate and the Montana legislature, that's on tap here today. Let's get to our Capitol recap, and it's a pleasure to welcome Jeremy Tribus. Jeremy, state senator, served in the House, I think that was 2017, 2021, and then the last session, 2023, and then 2025. Good morning, Senator Tribus. How you doing, Jeremy?
Good morning. Yeah, thank you. Yep, that's accurate. I was here in those sessions, and here I am again.
Yeah. Yeah, what's the difference between the House and the Senate?
Well, for numbers, the sheer numbers.
Yeah.
So there's 100 people in the House and 50 in the Senate, and, you know, you look at the composition of, you know, which party controls each, and it's about the same percentage, although I think that we have a higher percentage of Republicans in the Senate. But, and, you know, a lot of the people in the Senate have been around a little bit longer, generally. We have a lot of freshmen in both chambers, but, you know, we typically are thought of as maybe the more deliberative body at times, I suppose.
Well, you know, and that experience has paid off this year, too, because we've covered it here. It's no surprise. The difficulty it's been with Senator Ellsworth under ethics investigation, and they're still needing to figure that out. You know, of course, what happened on day one with Senator Ellsworth and a number of Republicans. But as I'm watching this, Senator, you know, I have a lot of respect for Senator Matt Regeer as well as Senate President, because it's not been, it's not been a basket of flowers in this session, but I think you guys are moving along. You're handling things pretty well, and there's still some ancillary things. You know, in your mind, maybe you can just talk about that, but I'm interested in how the body, because this is personal. You know, you try not to make it personal, but there are some things in here that have become personal, and you have to, I think, separate that as much as you can, because you know, and you guys repeat it, because it means something to you. You're there for your constituents.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly disappointing you spend so much time to get here and then things get sidetracked, or at least the drama interferes, but we certainly are working on things. I've been busy and I have a lot of bills still in the works, and that includes property tax, housing, criminal justice, among other issues. So they're still work getting done, but, you know, the headlines are going to be what's most exciting and sensational.
Well, not to me. I mean, you know, that's just noise. We got to, I try to filter through some of the noise there, and that's going on. That's part of the process, and it's up to us to, you know, to sift through that. Let's talk about one of those big bills, Senate Bill 32. It's a property tax bill. Let me see if I pulled it up here. I think I can remember. It was passed. Here it is, 3713. This was in late February. Then it was sent to Finance and Claims. It finally had a hearing on that on the 18th. But talk about that bill. There was some, you know, discussion on the floor when it was passed about getting outside the box and bringing some new ideas into this property tax reform debate.
Yeah, that's one of what I consider three big property tax bills, along with SB 90 and HB 231. It did pass the Senate floor with, I think, 37 votes, so it picked up a number of Democrats. So to some degree, it was bipartisan. There was folks that liked it on the other side as well. And then it got stuck in Finance and Claims, where it sits now. And it has a wide title, meaning, you know, generally revised property taxes. So, you know, if other bills are failing or something happens, it could be worked into the title of my bill to get it unstuck. It's kind of stuck in Finance and Claims.
Yeah, and that's one of those committees that needs to still got some straightening out, I think, with Senator Ellsworth and that situation. He sits on that committee.
Yeah, added a couple of members.
Yeah.
Right, the composition changed at one point. But yeah, and you know, I'll probably try to contrast the three bills and give an idea of what's out there and what the options are for us. But yeah.
Pitch it to me. What's 32 about?
So I'd say the three bills, starting with SB 32 lowers the taxable value rate Like right now, your property home would be at 1.35% and a business property would be 1.89%. This lowers those rates to 1.25 and 1.65%. So that creates a taxable value. And then at the local level, you have mills that change and float. But the idea is it lowers the taxable, available taxable value. SB 90 is Senator Glimm's bill, and it redistributes some tourism tax, but only from the general fund. And then HB 231 shifts, that's Lou Jones in the House, shifts taxes, in my opinion, to larger businesses and second, you know, additional homes. And each of them actually, funny enough, cost about $60 million a year. So in our budget,
wow.
That's kind of interesting. Cost is about the same.
What do you think? What do you think happens? I mean, I know there's a couple of Democratic proposals from the House, in particular. Some of them, you know, I think there's merit in them, and I've appreciated the body, both sides of the aisle, trying to move the ball forward on good bills so that they can have a good debate about it. But in the end, there's probably, you know, only one that's, well, in my mind, maybe your opinion on that, only one that should come out of there to remove confusion on that. Or maybe there's additional bills. I don't know. Talk about that process.
During the Senate Finance and Claims hearing, you know, I said Senate Bill 32, which is mine, and Senate Bill 90, which is Senator Glimm's, are complementary. They don't take away from each other. They just take money from the general fund. And if you combine them, you know, be a combined $120 million a year that we could use for property tax relief. My bill kind of does conflict with HB 231 because each of them affect the taxable value rate. So both of them can't pass in the same form or cause a conflict in the law. So it might be that mine having a white title could incorporate some aspects of HB 231. HB 231's kind of got weighed down in the deal-making process to get over to the it's had trouble moving, so it kind of got weighed down. Mine is stuck in finance and claims, and SB 90 is in the House ready to be heard. So,
yeah, SB 231, that's the governor's favorite proposal, right, from Representative Lou Jones? Is that the one?
That seems to – yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Talk about how difficult this has been or the challenges in trying to overcome that. You know, I've been paying attention, and a lot of the legislators, when they get to these bills on the floor, there's a lot of, well, it's not perfect. And I think everybody accepts that. You know, you don't have a one-size-fit-all because the state of Montana is vastly different east, west, north, south. You know, maybe go into that process a little bit.
Yeah, it certainly is a gauntlet. And you hear things about, you know, how this will affect local government and local funding. HB 231 kind of freaked out Billings because they thought maybe it's true that they'd lose $6 million. In their budget because of HB 231. But Billings is a little different because they have a self-imposed mill cap, from what I understand. So they're different than some of the other places. The other communities, some lawmakers were concerned with the composition of like residential property and business property and things like pipelines, which are more centralized, centrally assessed property. In counties that have more or less of those compositions, you'd see a shift in tax dollars and to some degree a loss, since maybe in the future, you know, my SB 32 allows for full inflationary increases. So in the future, they might actually get more in the long term, but local governments would. So that's kind of the debate that you hear on these bills is, you know, how does it affect local government and funding and services, which, you know, that's what taxes pay for. So that's the obvious concern.
There's a lot of pushback, but there's a lot of good debate, I think, about, you know, getting local governments to play their part in this. And the legislature... the local governments feel the legislature is playing a heavy hand. I think the legislature is feeling that the local governments are not really doing their part in all of this. Where is that coming together, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think the local governments certainly feel constrained. And, you know, if you're in that position to be on a city council or a county commission, you want the money to do what you need to do to fund services. But yeah, there's definitely a conflict there because, you know, I one particular city and county tends to be the problem child, which is Missoula and sometimes Gallatin and Bozeman, where, you know, we see these stories of things spent on funny things like bonds for open space and these sorts of proposals that we think, okay, that seems like a waste. And, you know, maybe the locals want it, but at the same time, it seems like often they don't, but they don't really have much of a say after they elect whoever they elect. So that's our republic, I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. We got to, you know, we always take the good with the bad, so to speak, and move it all forward. The attempts to maybe limit some of those mill levy opportunities at the local level, is that going to be effective?
You know, I don't know. Cause, yeah. Well, I'll put it this way. Property taxes are, in short, composed of three things. You know, taxable values of property, local mills that are set, and the local governments have the ability to set local mills, and the tax rates, you know, the taxable value rates themselves. And outside of that, even to make it more complicated, school funding is outside of that, has its own formula, mm-hmm. and there's an equalization formula to make schools, you know, largely funding students at the same level across the state. So just to make it more complicated, there's a school funding formula outside of that, which affects your property taxes, which are usually, like in my case, half of my property tax bill. So it's complicated. And yeah. if you change just one thing, it doesn't mean you've actually lowered taxes. So that's the hard part, is, oh, if I just do this, it'll change. But nope, there's like three factors you have to keep into consideration. It's like playing a game of whack-a-mole. You change one thing and another thing pops up and you still have the same taxes.
And I've heard that, and you know, it's almost somewhat humorous at times as well, about how you try to, you know, work everything out as best you can.
Right across the state, 56 counties and all the municipalities and townships and unincorporated areas, and you're just trying to make one, you know, quote unquote simple change, but it affects everybody and some people more than others, and the ones that affects more are the ones that tend to show up and say, don't do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I always ask this question when we're talking about this debate, and we have for a number of years. When is it time for Montana to kind of put aside all the, oh, nastiness, the four-letter word, sales tax, so to speak? And I'm not proposing a sales tax, but what I'm saying is it's time to have an open and honest and real big discussion. And, of course, Representative Lou Jones also served in the Senate, you know, would say this, and he did it years ago. Our tax structure has changed. A lot of our resource taxes are not at the same level, so there's more and more weight on property taxes. When do we have this debate about revamping all of Montana's taxes? You want to talk about complicated, I guess there's one right there. But is that needed, Senator Atribas?
So my two cents, because we have that debate, whether it's out in the open or in the background. Yeah. There's a current bill from Representative Barker that would have a sales tax pay for school funding, directed towards school funding, and I think place it in the Constitution. That's how it has to go. But, you know, I think majority of Montanans 9 months out of the year are going to be the ones paying the property tax. So one way or the other, I think we'll pay the same amount of taxes. What I'd like to do is pay less taxes. And so, and the other thing I hear on the doors, especially from people who move from other states and cities, is don't do it. Don't do a sales tax because it, you know, I don't feel like people, rightfully so, trust us as politicians to use the sales tax in the way intended, even if there's tight safeguards on it. I think they think we're going to have a sales tax plus a property tax plus an income tax. So yeah. I think trying to lower the taxes we have and trying to, you know, reduce government spending is the best policy instead of trying to maintain the status quo of always growing government.
Yeah, yeah, and I appreciate that. I mean, you send the money to Helena, they'll spend it. Send the money to Washington, they'll spend it. It's better to keep it in our own pockets in that regard. And I'm one of those who's probably, you know, 75% convinced that if there is a sales tax, it does exactly what people have been afraid of. You know, it gets used in the wrong way for the wrong purpose, and we just end up with more taxes. I'm going to take a break and come on. Is there anything else on property taxes that you wanted to maybe throw out there? Because I'll switch gears. There's a lot of things, judicial reform, election reform, sexual assault reform, a lot of things that you're involved in. Mm-hmm. But anything left here on property taxes?
No, I think that's a pretty good overview of what's going on. You know, folks can always log in online and see the progress of the bill and the content and the fiscal notes, so they can explore that and participate in debates if they show up at a committee online or in person here at the Capitol.
How's that been? Has it been real busy? Has there been a lot of, not just, you know, organizational or lobby testimony there, but has there been good citizen participation and not the ones who are just trying to create social media?
I'd say it's large. I'd like to see a lot more. I'd say participation, especially on property tax and local government bills, especially when, you know, Senator Hertz comes and says and brings a bill that says, hey, let's not have taxpayer funded lobbying. I'd like to see a lot more proponents from the citizens on those bills, as opposed to all the taxpayer-funded lobbyists coming against it as opposition. So things like that, I'd like to see a lot more people show up. But it's hard to know what's going on and when, and hard to get here. You know, it's difficult, I get it. But
yeah,
that's what I'd like to see.
Capital Recap for a Friday, 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. On the text line, State Senator Jeremy Treibas is with us. Senate District 10, that's the Central Montana Great Falls area. An accountant by trade, born where my kids were, in Missoula, Montana, and then went to College of Great Falls, Great Falls College of Technology, actually, and also then to Montana State University. And previous experience in the House, 2017 and 2023 legislature, as well as this one, 2025, the 69th Montana legislature. I appreciate you coming on, Senator, and again, thanks for your public service, too. It's especially nowadays, it can be a long and sometimes difficult haul, and I'm not sure that we have always, we being the public, have always been as kind as we could be to people serving in politics. Thank you. I'm going to take this call real quick because Citizen Skip listening in Hamilton on KLYQ. Thanks, Skip, for calling in again. Appreciate that. We're not quite done with property taxes. You got a question there, and you're on the air with Senator Treibas.
No, thank you, Tom, and I'll start off with I hope you both have a nice weekend. Over here in the Bitterroot, it's supposed to rain, and we were looking forward to it being nicer than that. But anyway, Senator Treibas, when it comes to property taxes, something that I think some people are confused about is the homestead exemption. I know that was something that was important to the governor right from the beginning, and I don't know if it's still in the mix, but would you please explain what it is? Because it's not, I don't believe it's as simple anyway as just going down and making sure that your property is homesteaded so that you get some sort of an exemption. And so that would have been my question for you to also answer. But I wanted to tell you, I live over in Jason Ellsworth's district, and the only... One good thing, I'll put it this way, one good thing about not expelling him is that we don't have to go through the rigmarole of our central committee coming up with three names to give to our commissioners, because the central committee here is like two groups of Neanderthals battling each other, and it's a mess. So
unfortunately,
I'm hoping that whatever happens is, you know, done in a way that takes less time than it has been taking, so that more business of the people can get done. But thanks ahead of time for your explanation of what I asked. And Tom, thank you a lot, and have a nice weekend, gentlemen.
Hey, Skip, thanks for calling. I appreciate that as well. It's a good point. That's a major vehicle or element of HB 231. These homestead, agstead, Comstead, meaning commercial exemptions. Jeremy, before you get into that, how long did it take you to understand property taxes in Montana? From the day you started looking into it to the day you felt like, oh, I get it. Maybe that hasn't happened yet. But how long did it take you?
Gosh, I think I really started digging into it in November of maybe 2022 or 23 during an interim. It must have been November 23, sometime during an interim committee, because I was on the local government interim committee and the revenue interim committee, which deals with taxes. And so that's what we do in the 20 months that we're not in session. And I just started to write down the formula and dig into it and recreate the, almost like trying to recreate a tax bill with the formulas and how the tax structure works. And so a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I really started digging in and then presenting on it so I can help other people understand it and understand it more as I tried to explain it.
Well, you're way ahead of me. I've been looking at it and I still don't get it. Couldn't explain it to anybody. But explain homestead exemption and how they would work in property tax reform.
I think the idea, and I'm just kind of trying to make sure I'm right on this, is that it almost works like an exemption on your taxes. So like when you take the standard deduction, it shields a certain amount of your income from taxation. Mm-hmm. Well, I think a homestead or comstead is similar in how it works, where, you know, they don't consider the first, I think the proposal was $100,000 in home value. Before then the tax taxable value rate is applied, and mills are then tacked onto your house. So I think that's the idea, is it exempts a certain part of the value of your home before taxes, a tax rate is applied.
Yeah, I think that's it for ag land as well. I mean, there's so many. I think there's 8 or 9 different classifications for property taxes. And
18.
And wow. Subclasses. Yeah. Well, see, yeah, a simplified tax. There have been groups out there have been calling for just a fair tax or a flat tax for a long time, and I see some merit in it. I really do.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I'd say that's kind of what SB 32 is meant to do. It flattens those 18 into about 2 classes and a few miscellaneous classes. So there's a homeowner occupied 1.25%, and then there's, if your property generates revenue, 1.65% taxable value on the property value.
Have you looked at any of those things coming over from the House yet? 155 from Representative Thane, or maybe that's 154. I think Representative Carlin has a 154 or 155. Thane's bill would kind of play with those that exemption rate a little bit. Carlin's approach, I think, is sort of interesting, as it's tied to your ability to pay as well. Have you looked at those?
Not closely enough that I could speak intelligently on them, but I'm vaguely aware that they're coming this way to the Senate.
Yeah, well, you handle thousands. I mean, literally. So how late a day do you work?
It depends. You know, there's the social events that happen after. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I get here usually about in time for my business and labor committee, which starts at 8:30 in the morning, at 8 or 8:30. And then, you know, we have our lunch and floor session. Floor session is always at 1 p.m. And then afternoon committees start at 3. And it depends on the content and the number of bills. So when you first start getting House bills over to the Senate in committees, you know, you could have 7 or 8 a day. And some of them might be controversial. And even if one is controversial, it can take a while. So, you know, that puts us out the door later in the evening. And then we have events and other, you know, obligations. And then I also have a job work outside of the, what I say is the real world outside of this place too. So, it can make the long days. You know, I'm working till midnight every night just to try to catch up on everything I'm responsible for. So,
yeah. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Got a minute before we take a hard break here. I just want to talk about you're an accountant, right? And you've got your own accounting firm. Isn't this a super busy time for accountants as well?
It absolutely is. It is. So I manage a lot of communication via text and email and make a batch of phone calls and emails when I have a minute in between everything. Yep, it's busy.
So would you would probably entertain the idea of a flat tax or some kind of fair tax, wouldn't you? Just for
it's kind of almost what we did by the other CPA, Greg Kurtz in the Senate, is with his bill SB 399 in 2021, it's kind of flattened everything. And so we're getting close.
Yeah, good. I like that approach. Text message to get out here. State Senator Jeremy Tribus is with us here, District 10, out of the Great Falls area, central Montana. Previously served with the Great Falls Rescue Mission. So I'm going to kind of bring that up. But good day, sir. Listening to your show and talking about possible sales tax. Once a sales tax, no matter how it started, the government can increase it exponentially. When I was a kid, here's the story. They started a sales tax in Vermont of 2 to 3%. Within just a couple of years, it was 5. And now I'm not even sure what it is. That could happen in every state. I think those fears are very real. Thanks for that comment as well. And so even though a sales tax may be an attractive solution and trying to, you know, get some of that recreation industry money into our infrastructure coffers, it's not easy doing that. I don't know that that's a real tough one. I don't know if we want to pick up on that, Jeremy. We kind of talked about that as well. That's a tough road to hoe. Hey, talk to me about your experience with the Great Falls Rescue Mission and how that has shaped, how you are as a legislator.
Yeah, I was there for about 13 years. And one thing about it is, we really didn't take government money. And so maybe a little bit towards the end of my time there. But, it's just kind of shows that you can run a homeless shelter, a nonprofit, without government funds, if you're supported by your community and if you're supported by grant funding. Gianforte Foundation was a big part of that. It's one of our larger foundations that gave to us. And, you know, you can give, you can make an operation like that work without the coercion of tax money going through a bureaucrat's hands to decide who deserves it.
Yeah, I visited there. It's a great facility, and the people are are genuine about it. And if you are an organization that has integrity and that you're out there doing the work that you say you're doing, your community will support you. So
absolutely.
Great example of that. Along with that, you know, you'll see the best and the worst of people in some of those circumstances. And so there's a bill that you have introduced. Others have signed on to it. It's in process. Senate Bill 348, an act revising penalties for the crime of sexual assault. And there's more here as well. Talk about how we approach. And I think I've said this, and I know I said it to you off air. I think our Attorney General Austin Knutson has moved the ball forward when it comes to putting some teeth into human trafficking. As also those who are on the other side, causing the offense as well, as participants in it. What about this bill, and what about our public safety when it comes to these types of crimes?
Right. So, kind of the idea from this came to my attention due to a Facebook friend who was affected by the situation in Helena, where a male nurse had taken advantage of a female patient. And in that situation, it seemed like the prosecutor didn't seem like want to charge sexual assault because it really wasn't, there wasn't much of a penalty to it. It's, you know, right now it's 6 months or $1,000 fine for a first offense. Mm-hmm. So 6 months in prison or up to $1,000 fine. So it wasn't really, not to say the prosecutor wouldn't charge it, but it just wasn't necessarily worth charging with it without something else to attach to it.
How's it being received?
Well, it's working through the process so far. There was a little bit of opposition because there was some fear that increasing the penalties would cause women to not report sexual assault because they didn't want maybe someone who they were still had feelings for to report it. So they thought maybe the reports would go down. But I know, I think if it's happening, it ought to be charged and there ought to be a hard enough penalty to make it worth charging a first offense. Because if the first offense doesn't get charged, then the second and third increasing penalties and offenses don't get charged either, in my theory.
And I don't have crime statistics in front of me. I think reporting on this can be, I don't want to call it suspect, but there are challenges there. The numbers kind of wane and wax. I think at times you don't look at all the numbers. I think you look at the people and the offenses here. With your past experience as well and now in the legislature, are we keeping our public safe?
Well, it's hard to do. And, you know, one common story that I hear from my local community, and I just heard it again, you know, they're letting people out of jail that probably shouldn't be let out of jail because the jail is full. I'm like, yeah, that's been going on for like 10 or 15 years. Sorry, but we don't want to increase our property taxes to build more jails and prisons. But at the same time, we don't want dangerous people on our streets. So it's a hard conundrum. And, you know, the county prosecutor and the elected sheriff have to make those decisions. And, you know, we only have so many judges too to work through the caseloads in a timely manner. So it's a tough problem that's hard to solve without money and concerted effort.
Right. Yes. And one of those things runs out. that's the latter. Yeah. Okay. So this one is Senate Bill 348. If you guys are interested in looking at it, it did pass on second reading, 39-11. Picked up more votes on third reading, 47-3. And it'll be in House Judiciary. So it's on the other side. House Judiciary beginning Monday, 8 a.m. So, yeah.
I have a tax bill and this bill at 8 a.m. on Monday in two different committees in both chambers. So I'll be in two places at once.
yeah, you will, won't you? That's exactly what it'll be. how do you prepare when you're going to give testimony? Because you have to pitch it to a certain degree, but you want to, what if you've got a real tight piece of legislation, the presentation can kind of, it does itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I try not to overdo it. I try to read what's in the bill and give the basic facts, and then I try not to over-answer, so I don't try to answer questions that haven't been asked, although I certainly try to anticipate any confusion and alleviate that. So at least I lay a basis of knowledge, and then I react to the questions that are asked.
And I think a lot of people take that approach. The legislators, yeah. That's a
the
tough question.
Not to overtalk something, I would say. If you're overtalking it and over-explaining it, you're answering a lot of questions that nobody's asking, and then people get bored and they tune out. So keep it lively, keep it interesting.
Yep.
Keep their attention.
Yep, I agree. Let's look at this one again. State Senator Jeremy Tribus is with us, has an accounting business. It's going to be pretty busy this time of year, and it's actually Tribus Tax and Accounting, but also has served in the legislature in a couple of sessions in the House, 2017, 2021, and then 2 years ago, and then this session in 2025. Let's pick up on this one. It is Senate Bill 129, an act allowing electors to add a political party preference to their voter registration. This has a little bit of a different flavor to it here, a different tone than some of the other election reform bills that we've talked about. It did pass the House Senate 29-21 on third reading. That was in early January, and then it will hit the House floor on Monday after it came out of their State Administration Committee in February.
I think it hits second reading today.
Okay. I thought it was Monday, 31st. Well, it could be.
They're debating it. If I read it right, anyway.
Okay, yeah, talk about it. Yeah, tell me.
So yeah, it allows a person. It's kind of a light touch where, you know, we don't register by party in Montana, and there's been some opposition to that because people are afraid of a closed primary system. But this isn't that. This is just allowing a person to register under each qualified party, which is the Republican, Democrat, and I believe Libertarian Party. So those are qualified parties. And then an other party affiliation as an option. They don't have to choose one. They can say other. And they can also prefer not to answer, which would be, let them remain anonymous if they want to remain anonymous. And they'll still get four ballots in the primary or however many ballots there are for the presidential election, right? So, and they'll get to choose.
What did you learn about this bill when it hit the Senate floor?
People are still afraid that it's, some of the opposition was, well, people's votes should be private. People's information should be private. And I said, well, they still can be. You can prefer not to answer. So you can, it's a freedom of association bill. It's, you can associate with the party if you want to. You don't have to. And, you know, that's a First Amendment right.
How important is it to you, in your mind, to get some real actual election reform? And there's, you know, that's kind of a broad term nowadays, because there's when you look at judicial reform, that can kind of be election reform as well. But talk about how important you feel it is, and maybe what the opposition, you know, feels about some of this election reform.
It's not an area that I've necessarily dug into or delved into, but I certainly, you know, want everybody on whichever side they are to believe in the accuracy of their elections. And for me, you know, being an accountant, and that brings in the auditor perspective, is can you, you know, audit it with your own eyes? Can you personally observe that your election is secure and that your vote matters? And so I think for those reasons that election integrity matters.
Jeremy Tribus again wants to, we got just a few more minutes. Do you want to pick up on 549, Senate Bill 549, another one you're carrying?
I had a tax draft left, so I took a crack at K-12 refundable tax credit for education expenses. And so kind of a late stage bill, but I thought, you know, I can whip this together quick, and it'll be in, that's the other bill at 8 a.m. Senate tax this Monday that I have to present. And it would allow for public school teachers or homeschool teachers or private schools, individuals to take a refundable tax credit on their personal return if they, say, pay for classroom expenses out of pocket and get a little money back for that. So they'd get some credit for doing the right thing.
Isn't that amazing that that is not already in law?
In some sense, yeah. You know, it's kind of a niche little credit. And with Senator Hertz, he's been trying to simplify the tax code. So he's removed a lot of credits with the bill that we passed in 2021. But he signed on to it, so hopefully that means he'll be on board and stay on board with it. So,
are we talking about? Is there a limit on that? How much money do teachers spend on their own? I know I have teachers in my family, so I know it's a lot. But what does the data say?
That's a good question. I didn't even dig that far. I just kind of looked at the general policy idea. There is a limit of $1,250, kind of modeled similarly to the refundable credit you can get as an elderly homeowner paying property taxes or rent. So kind of in that arena. It might get chopped down through the process. If it does, that's fine, to a lesser amount. But, you know, I started with something similar to something else we have in law.
thank you for doing that. And to all you teachers out there as well, thank you for being so personally engaged with those youngsters. I think you know how much of a difference that you make in their lives. You are blessed to be in that position. And so I'm always praying for you guys to do the best that that you can with our youngsters. It is our future. Anything else? We got a couple of minutes here. I just want to, you know, throw it to you. What's on my mind is what you might think of the next, 35, 40 days here. We got 40 some left, I think, whatever. What needs to be done?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of hopeful for some of my legislation. I'm hopeful that we do actually pass a meaningful property tax reform. I've been a little bit skeptical about our ability to actually do that, but hopeful. We have time left. I have a bill on housing density, which is working its way through the process as well. And, just keep an eye out for other opportunities as we go through the last days of the session. And then, we have to deal with the budget, balance the budget. And that's HB2, and that's coming our way soon, too.
Yeah, there's I just saw, I think, HB5, the long-range building bill get debated in the House. So those things are coming your way too, and a lot of work left still, and so a lot of midnight nights.
We'll be working hard, and with whatever else comes up, we'll have to deal with the stress and trauma of all the rest of the process.
Yeah, filter out the noise. Hey, Senator, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, State Senator Jeremy Treves once again. Here on the Capitol Recap, a GOP edition, the More Power Hour. Next week, it'll be the Dem Power Hour for our Capitol Recap. Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.